was not.
How art could improve print. My topic was how art could sensitize people to their own capacity to think about things in a spiritual or more spiritual way. I don't think that you look at a painting and you go and daven. I certainly don't think that. But what I do think is that in order to daven, you need experiences. Life experiences which indicate to you that you have a certain kind of capacity that you didn't know about before you had those life experiences. Like one experience, I think, is just standing next to somebody who davens. That's a wonderful experience. But there are other kinds of experiences that might be helpful in this regard. Literature, which is like a very slow kind of way, it doesn't work so well with young people today. But literature also tends to pull apart the human experience and to show me that there is something special about it. Once I can start thinking about people and situations as being special, then maybe I can understand something about a minion. I can understand something about working together in prayer, which is certainly a difficult idea. But it's not something that you can sell frontally or halachically. But so halacha becomes a kind of a hideout. Like instead of saying, why don't I feel like davening, everybody says, am I doing it right? Now, I think you have to do it right. I mean, I'm very conservative when it comes to things like that. However, there's no doubt that it's very limiting. Like you're sort of saying, instead of asking the right question, you keep asking the wrong question. They say, is it exactly 6:59, you know, Sosman Kriyashma, or what, 6:59 and 30 seconds? Like you can make a whole ASIC out of it, right? I think on Shabbos I told people that it's interesting that the Hasidim developed this idea that they were always on time, which was the same as saying that they don't care about time. They don't care, first the davening, there's no time. Because whatever the reason, but the yeshiva guys, are very nervous. So you go into a yeshiva minyan in the morning. What do you make of a minyan? You know, everybody knows what time is it? You start and you finish. What time? What is solves by this? What's all about that? And since this changes every day, since the exact time, all these things change daily, you can talk about them every day. So that when you like you sort of, and then there are people. I have a son-in-law, a daughter living with a yachter. So you know the Shulchan Aruch, it says that when you daven Shmon Esrei, you should face Yerushalayim. You face Yerushalayim, so for many, many years, if you lived in Ukraine, or if you lived in Kurdistan, or if you lived in New York, facing Yerushalayim is not a problem. You either face south, or you faced east, or you faced west, and you did, right? It was not a problem, because everybody knew if you were in Russia, Yerushalayim is south, but if you live in the Veya Cove, oh, then there's a problem, because there's somebody in Shul who has a little machine that tells him that you can't do it north or south or east or west, but it has to be so many degrees off of south, and then you get the Kodesh Kodoshim. So then he did it. So he did it, he put up a sign in the Shul with a compass, And he showed people, but the people didn't have their own personal compasses. They probably put the sitter, you could buy a sitter with a compass in it. You know, that's all because of this fellow who started telling people how many degrees off of north or off of south is Yerushalayim. So then what he did in this shul in the Bay Yaakov was, the people complained. They said, well, how could it be that if I look in this way, and my neighbor looks in the same way, how can we both be right? How can we both be right? And he says, obviously, everybody knows that there's got to be some fraction of a difference. between where he's supposed to look and where I'm supposed to look. So then he went and he printed a special a map, a compass, that for every seat in the shul. You put it on the floor. You put it on the floor and you can stand with the compass and you know that you're facing your shul. Now this could only happen in a kind of yeshiva-oriented minyan, right? You know the Hasidic minyan. Well, the Hasidim, they really go out to the mikveh, they wear little Hasidims, they run around, they think they're davening, you know, they think that when they go to the mikveh in the morning, they're already davening, it's all part of the same deal. There's no time, there's no... And so, and you ever see Hasidim stand in one place where they daven? Never. They don't sit in the seat, they don't stand, so they don't have any limitations of time and place. And so you have these different approaches. So I feel that you have to follow, you have to do what the halacha says. But you have to also be able to develop the capacity to ask yourself the question of whether you're actually davening or whether you're doing something else. You're just sort of fulfilling. You know, there's a great thing. Tosfos said that no one davenes because of one. So it's like, it's a boon. It's a boon. If no one davenes because of one, so then we're all in whatever it is, we're in, right? If no one dies in Kavod, so why should I die in Kavod? Why should I feel badly about that? The person says you can't die in Kavod, so that's it. But yet, there is, you see, in modernity, there is an interest in finding ways to add a little Kavod to davening. My feeling is you have to get to sensitize a person, or most people who are educated, to serious kinds of thinking, ways of thinking seriously about your own capacity to have this kind of experience, and I think that art is helpful. It won't work for everybody, and it won't be good for everybody, but if it is good for somebody, it could be very helpful. Yeah.
So your
it's an interesting question. I mean, it could be. And I'm sure not everybody needs that. Some people can just walk up to God and die. They don't need to trip themselves into saying, I'm someplace else or I'm in a different world. They can just do it. Okay.
שצריכים לבוא לתפלל ולהגיד את המילים. זה מה שהוא מלמד אותם. ואני, שאני לא בא בעולם כזה, זה משפיע עליי בצורה חיובית. אבל האם זה יכול להשפיע על ילדים או לא, אני לא יודע. הילדים באים לברסלב בלילה, לא באים ביום, הצעירים. ובסוף, בסוף התפילה הם רוקדים. אז כולם נהנים מהריקוד. אני חושב שזה החלק הרלוונטי. בגלל זה נחמד, זה לא... אבל לא. אבל זה לא מה שקורה, אבל הילדים לא מבינים מה שקורה לדעתי, ושאף אחד לא מסביר להם. ואז ברסלב הזה גם לא יודעים מה קורה, והם עושים את זה, אצלם זה טבע. אבל הנה, התפילה חסידית אין כבר. אין דבר כזה. לא יודע אם זה היה, אבל היום אין. כן.
לגרות את
החושים
עד המקסימום. לראות את
זה מהפכים בתים בעולם, לעשות את הדברים הכי... סליחה, אני לא אמרתי עד המקסימום, ואני לא... אני רק אמרתי שאם לא הייתה, אבל זה... יש תגובה בדרך כלל, כן? בדרך כלל אנשים מושפעים מזה, לא משהו, לא נראה. סליחה.
לא,
אבל...
זה כי מה
שאתה אגיד
שלגבי
תגובה
אני חושבת שהסוד בללמד ילד להגיע לחוויה רוחנית כדי שהיא ולא חלק מהעניין של להגיע לתפילה בכוונה הוא להיות מסוגל להרגיש את הוואו הזה לא רק מול גרנד קניון אלא גם מול נמלה. יש שיר נהדר של לאה גולדברג ולדן ילכים ברכבית כולל לסוד עליך המל, אני לא מתקשר על החירות ובקורות ופלות, לנשום אדם יוכל להיכשל. אני חושבת שזה האמת, זאת אומרת, להתפלל על כל פסיק ולא על דברים גדולים. והנושא של אמנות הוא לדעתי, זאת אומרת, משהו מאוד אישי. יש מי שהאמנות תגרום לו חוויה רוחנית ויש מי ששירה תגרום לו חוויה רוחנית. באופן אישי, החוויות הרוחניות שלי נגרות מדברים אחרים לגמרי, ממש לא מבינות. אבל באמת, זאת אומרת, ואני חושבת שזה מאוד אישי, ובטח חוזר לפתח רגישות, אבל צריך להיות מסוגלים להיות רגישים לעובדה שחלק מהתלמידים זה ממש לא מדברים.
עיקר הטענה היא שצריכים להתייחס לבעיה. אין ספק שקשה מאוד ללמד מה שאיננו בתוכי. וטוב מאוד ללמד מה שיש לי בתוכי. וזה אני מסכים איתך. זה לא שפה שמדבר לכולם, שאפשר להשתמש בו בצורה יעיל עם כולם. אני רק אומר, אבל בעיקר, המורים, כמורים, חייבים לפתח את היכולת העצמית למסור לתלמידים את השפה שאיתם הם יכולים לדבר על חוויות. על רגישות, על רגישות, על העולם, על תדלות העולם, או תדלות הקטן שבעולם, כפי שאת אומרת. כל זה נכון, אני מסכים. אני לא בוחר ארט, כן, ואני לא בוחר את השיטה. אני רק אומר, שאנחנו, אולי אני יכול לדרבן אתכם, כל אחד בנפרד, לחפש את התמצית של עצמו.
אני חושב שיש גם לא מעט אנשים שדווקא הריקוד הזה עושה לנו.
את הריקוד אחרי התפילה?
הריקוד אחרי התפילה, הריקוד
תוך תפילה, זאת אומרת, דווקא הדברים שמובאים בלידי מחר
עושים להם את
החוויה הרוחנית. אני יודעת,
אני רואה את הבן שלי, למשל, שכשהוא מגיע למקום שמוקדים אותו כדי תפילה, הוא ממש חווה חוויה הרוחנית.
טוב, אני לא יכול להתייחס לבן שלו. אני חושב שיש... יש חוויות פשוטות יותר, ויש חוויות עילאיות. וכמחנכים, אסור לנו כל הזמן לסמוך על החוויות הפשוטות. אני יודע שבמשך כמה וכמה שנים, הרבה מאוד שנים, היו עוקדים בישיבת הכותל, לכותל המערבי, כל נר שבת. אם זו היה חוויה רוחנית עילאית, אני לא בטוח. האם מישהו נהנה מזה? אולי. אבל בכל אופן, מי שלומד הרבה, ומי שברמה, רמת המשכל שלו הוא גבוה, והכמות החינוך שלו הוא עצום, והידע שלו בתורה הוא לא רגיל, נגיד, בהשוואה לאיזה חקלאי פולני. אני חושב שגם החוויות שצריכים להציע לו צריכות להיות פחות פשוטות, וחוויות שהוא יכול, שיעוררו בו גם במקומות אחרים וגם במצבים שונים את אותה הרגישות שיש לו, שהוא יכול להביא אותה לתפילה.
אני חושב שאתם לא מבינים שאומר, כי מה שלכל משתמע, אני חושבת שאתם חושב את התחושה שהייתה לי בתחילת הדברים שלך, זה שאנחנו צריכים להיות מודעים לעובדה שאנחנו עוסקים עם ילדים שיש להם עולם חוויה מאוד עשיר, ולכן כדי להביא אותם לחוויה רוחנית צריך לחדש, להעצים, ואני חושבת שזה קצת, זה כמו שאומרים מסוימים, זאת אומרת, זה כאילו לגרות את החושים עוד יותר ועוד יותר ועוד יותר, זה מסוכן.
לא, אני חושב שצריך להתחלק. זאת אומרת, המורה צריך להסביר לילד מה חשוב לו, מה עוזר לו, איפה הוא רואה את...
מה חשוב
לו? לא רק איפה הוא רואה את גדלות הבורא בעולם, הוא צריך פשוט להתחלק בצורה אמיתית. וזה כבר צעד חשוב בכיוון הנכון. טוב, אם חי אני אקרח כסף.
יש משהו, אני חושב שחסר, אני מתפלב, שאולי זה תופעה, אני מסדר את זה, בכי נפשי.
את יומי, אתה לומד? את יומי?
כן. אם היינו, לימוד התמונה הזאת, הייתו בין מזמור ונערות, כדי שבת פועלים, איזה יופי, זה באמת היה איזה קוהרנטיות בין החוויה לבין התפילה. וכל בעצם שזה חוויה מסוימת, שלא משנה אם זה דרך תמונה, אמנות, סמים, דרך הרבע, כל אחד בתפילה, שהוא חוזר מאוד לשיעור, תפילה רגילה שאין שום קשר לכאורה בין החוויה לתפילה.
בסדר, תמיד יש, תמיד בעבור, אני חושב שכשרואים משהו בטבע שמרשים ואז אוצלי ובאחר, אני רוצה להתפלל מנחה, אני חושב שזה כן משנה, או זה יכול לשנות, זה יכול לשנות, כן? בבני עקיבא למשל לא בונים על זה בכלל, כן? בטבע, זאת אומרת, הפגישה של הנוער עם הטבע הוא מאוד יעיל כזה. איך אני מגיע מכאן לעבור את הצוק הזה לשם? זאת אומרת, זה ה...
אני מאוד כוללני מה שאתה אומר, ואני תלוי איפה, אני לא יודעת את החוויה שלי מבני עקיבא, שבכל פעם שעבדנו מול נוף יפה, אז המדריך, ואחר כך אני כמדריכה לחניכה, וזה היה עומד ואומר, נער אבו מעשיך השם, וזה בני עקיבא שלי, זה טיולי בני עקיבא שלי, זה לא...
אני פגש את
זה. אני ידעתי שהוא אמר לי כך הוא הרגיש, וזה מאוד הרגשתי בו. נחשבתי ראש, וזה מה שהוא...
אבל אני
באמת לא
אופן.
בלי אקטור לגיטימציות,
למה לא
נחשב? טוב. גם שהיית
ביחידה.
זה
נורא נוסיף.
זה
נבנה
כמו לכל דבר.
שם אותו
לא נבנה. הייתי אומר, במסגר את החוויה שזה לא יפרוץ מעבר לרובריקה שאנחנו רוצים שהילד יתקבל.
יש מבוגר.
בסופו של דבר להבין מה מקור הנפש. לא צריך להגיד מהיופי, מה זה מעשיך. למה נאמר? אתה עושה את השיעור בבית, אני יודע. מה מקור הנפש.
Just
two points. The article that you wrote basically seemed to imply that there needs to be an art curriculum or a place for an art curriculum in the school, and the question, one of the questions that you ask is what is it going to take place of in terms of having it, I believe.
I don't remember that.
Everything has to become a cheshbon. What I'm getting from this is you don't need an art curriculum in school. That's not what you need, because basically art is involved. This did not do this for me personally, and I don't think as a student in high school, which I did have an art course, I don't think it would have done it for me as well. I think what you need is, based upon what you're saying, is a class in some type of opening up your eyes kind of an experience. I don't know exactly what you would call it, where basically you would have...
using art as a tool.
No. I would say part of the class might be art to get the people who are interested in art to feel that way, part of the issue would be music to get the people who can open that. Part of it would be to take them to Square or someplace else to see a Hasidic Rebbe daven for somebody. Part of it would be, in other words, a course based upon experiences. Of course, when you have a course based upon experiences, it somewhat cheapens the experiences that you have. Definitely there is an idea where kids are smart enough to know, well, they're giving me the experiences because they want me to experience something, and therefore I'm not going to have. That's point number one. Point number two, when a teacher sometimes, I'm not saying this, I think a teacher should do this, I just think that there has to be a certain amount of carefulness. When a teacher gives over what they find wonder in the world, sometimes what teachers feel wonder in the world about, kids look at and basically see, this guy is crazy. And it's a little bit nuts. And depending on how, you might be telling over a story, and this happens you might be telling over a story which is so meaningful, and like 30 kids in front of you, you're sitting there, what is that about? You know, but what is that? So I'm just saying to you, there is this idea of telling over what makes your eyes open and the wonder in the world, but it doesn't, again, there has to be a certain amount of carefulness, and I think the problem, at least what I'm getting, is the problem is more, it's more difficult than any of the solutions that we brought up now. How exactly to do this, especially when you have kids that are basically numb, based upon Game Boys and Xboxes and television and everything else. I mean, I have kids that went to the Swiss Alps during vacation to go swim, to go school skiing, like I know what they do there. And I would say, you came back from the Swiss Alps, and they're saying, the skiing was great. And I'm like, oh, but they were the Swiss Alps. And no, but the skiing was great. Not to mention a couple other things. I just think the problem is greater than any of the solutions, and I wish there was some way to investigate more what we can do. It might be not a process of class, and it might not be one teacher. It might be somehow we have to overhaul what we're doing in second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, 11th, 12th, community education, etc., what we do with parents, and all of that put together.
I just like to sort of respond to what you said. The fact that this didn't move you, that's okay. But you'll have to come to 15 more lectures on this topic until you give in. So there's no doubt, as I think I said in the second part of the introduction, that we are avoiding certain responsibilities as educators. And one of those responsibilities is to clarify to the children that just because we're older than they are doesn't mean we're necessarily wrong, especially about things about taste. Even though in the world, the teenagers, the teenage population determines taste across the board, right? They determine taste for music, for clothes, for style, for all of that. I think that and if you don't follow them, they can be very ruthless in putting you down. But I think a concerted effort has to be made to state to the children that they may not be the final arbiters of all good things. That's one thing. And the second thing is, I think it's very important that the teachers or personalities who now think of themselves as being reasonable personalities share their thoughts with the children instead of being taken in. I don't know what X-Boy is, but I think I know what Game Boy is. If you go into a class and you can get the kids to convince the teacher that what he should do is try to beat the kids at some kind of a game, right, then I think you've pretty much lost. You lost that, because even if the teacher knows chemistry and the students don't know chemistry, I mean, the students know it's not a big deal. I mean, they'll also know chemistry sooner or later. If you can't convince a kid, a student, that there's depth to the position of the teacher, that it should be respected, and it has to be at least that the student has to deal with it. But that's real. That's the real thing. And you can't consider devalue the pleasure principle a little bit, that everything is judged by whether you have a good time or not. So I think that those are really overwhelming problems.
But I think that the greater discussion in terms of the teacher presence in a classroom has to do certainly, definitely with his perception of himself, his or her perception of himself, etc. But I think I just had a discussion with a group of students today about it, and part of it is that the way that the community reacts to teachers. Meaning, it's very hard to convince, well, it's not so hard, but in many cases it is difficult to convince students of the depth of the teacher when basically all they hear when they get home is something about the rabbi of the shul, teacher, and I think that there's, that while dealing with the teacher himself, how he perceives himself when he walks into that classroom, because I think a lot of it is, you know, as one rabbi, when I first started teaching, told me, this is your classroom, you're the king of your classroom. This is, you have to have that self-esteem when you walk into the classroom. On the other hand, it has to be worked with the community, which I've discussed many, many times, about the way that the community, the Jewish community as a whole, treats its faculty, treats its teachers. And I think that has to go hand in hand.
You have to understand that in Israel it's worse, because there's also the Mishrad HaChinuch, which is an invention that no one ever could have imagined. You're right, David, but there are things you can do against that, I think there are things you can do to deal with that problem. It's a problem. It's true that there's a pecking order of lack of respect for people who only know how to teach. And that after all, people only know how to teach are basically failures who weren't able to do the real stuff and make that much money. So they're only able to make this much money. And that entirely dependent on the whim of the next chairman of the board, who probably knows a lot about education. Right? So everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. The problem is, of course, who's the problem? Is the problem the people who create that problem or the people who put up with it? I don't know. I think the people who put up with it could act to create a different reality. And once they create that different reality, they're going to have to teach the kids about art. Okay. Look, if you don't like art, I mean, to start with Rothko would be very difficult. Yes?
I have a certain ambivalence to the idea of art opening up, you know, feelings and whatever. Every time we start talking about art, so, you know, based on the comments, we jump into nature. So nature, you know, I hear that because, you know, the designer of nature is in charge. But the designer of art is some locale or some bigger locale or smaller locale. I'm not sure that speaks to kids.
I don't know what speak to kids is. What the kid speaks to kids is what I want to talk about.
Right.
That's what speaks to kids.
In order to help them develop,
if you tell me I can't use these words because they don't know what they mean, I've used different words, I'll do that. But what speaks to children, what speaks to the kids, is what I want to talk about. They don't have a say.
That's true.
I'm very much into that. And that's why I'm not a teacher.
If you want to develop a certain amount, if the goal of this enterprise is to develop that now feeling,
show people that they have the capacity to have that feeling more often, more regularly. It's more part of them than they might have thought.
Right. So I'm saying that I think that if you want to engender that kind of feeling in a student, you want to allow them to begin to believe and see within themselves that they have that ability. To do that while they're looking at something that was designed and created by a being for whom they one looks, have a certain greater level of respect than for whatever design, some picture that anybody can give any sort of meaning to. You know, with the same way we can talk here about triangles, somebody else is going to see rectangles, and somebody else is going to see circles, is in my mind much more difficult.
It's kind of my analysis.
Pardon?
My analysis has been undermined by rectangles and circles. Can I say this? I understand I think that one of the things about modern orthodoxy that I find compelling, as opposed to what other people say about modern orthodoxy, none of which I find compelling at all,
Because I don't think modern Orthodoxy is interested in Israel, in Eretz Israel particularly. I don't think they are particularly interested in women learning Torah, just except when they're forced to. What's the third thing about modern Orthodoxy? Eretz Israel, women? Oh, general studies, yeah, going to college. No, no. They go to college, they get a profession. The thing that I think could be compelling about modern Orthodoxy is that they have a respect for the human endeavor. That they recognize the fact that man created himself slash woman, right, is meaningful in that they can produce something meaningful. That's what Tzelem Elokim means. Otherwise, what difference does it make? What difference does it make? I think that modern people who've had the benefit of education are able to say, I can judge the result of the human enterprise. Without always getting into the question of what kind of person was he, how did he live, and what did he do, and was he nice to his neighbors, and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. It's true, I agree that to be a Gadol B'Torah, you have to be a great person. There's some kind of a correspondence. To be a Gadol did is wondrous. It is a wondrous world that we live in. But not only the mountains are wondrous, but the cities are wondrous, the setup is wondrous. It's not good, perfect, or anything like that. It's just wondrous. I mean, could anyone have thought about this hundreds of years ago? You know what we have is, so I think that modern Orthodoxy, I think they have the capacity, or should have the capacity, to recognize the wondrous nature of human achievement, which is not the same as saying, I would like to be like Benjamin Franklin. I don't want to be like Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin was, to my mind, like not of what was of high moral standards, or Thomas Jefferson. I don't think Thomas Jefferson, he wrote a great declaration. But he was not. But he was a slave owner. I don't think being a slave owner is a great thing. So I can handle that. I mean, can't say like Thomas Jefferson did a great thing, and he might have been wrong about a few other things, or anybody. I mean, what's the problem? But the human endeavor is significant. But we at least we're asking rights. Don't you think that's great? No?
I do, but I think there's a difference. Valuable, and that's
going
to be the thing that's going to help me develop my own.
No, I didn't say that. What I said was that the human enterprise is noteworthy. It's worthy of noticing. And so while it's true that not only the people who painted these paintings are people that I'd like to have my students emulate, nevertheless, the result of the human enterprise may be of significance. Well, it's very easy. People take, well, like music. Music is easy. It goes easy with full people because there are no people there, and there are no words, and there are no pictures, and there are no nothing. So, but a lot of the people who wrote music were not great there. So was somebody going to stop listening to Mozart because he didn't like Mozart? I mean, I can't even imagine. Stop listening to Beethoven because he didn't like the way he treated his wife or something. I don't... Wagner is a political thing, you know, in Israel. They never existed on the floor. Jews always listened to Wagner. What Jews did listen to Wagner. It's only in Israel that they figured out this idea. That there are plenty of bad people in the world, but Wagner was bad for it, was worse than anybody else. It wasn't worse than anybody. Talented, great people are not always good people.
System where I appreciate what the person did, even though that they're an awful person, setting up a way where a kid will understand, well, if I accomplish something great, I'm not saying this.
Because I think there's great danger of my character. There's great danger of being part of the world, as any square chassid will tell you. And there's no doubt that there's a certain number of modern Orthodox Jews, young, like my age and younger, who thought that becoming the square chassid is the way to go. Because they couldn't figure out this question. Anyway, what about watching baseball games? And basketball games? You know those basketball players? They're the salt of the earth, right? The cream of human existence, those guys. Will Chamberlain. I mean, I know I'm a little dated, right? But I'm thinking more of what he said than what he did. I mean, what are we talking about? So far, I agree it's dangerous. But that's not called modern. Modern means that you can get the good. It was like, you know, what, Mayor? Yeah, but this is not, we're not talking about apikorsis, we're just talking about... I know it's chokhmah v'goyim, it's quality, but it's something real, it's something there that's worthy. Is it dangerous? Could it be attractive? Yeah, I think so. You think that all the Israeli kids go to India? You think that could be dangerous? Yeah, it could be dangerous. Anything could be, that's the price. That's the price you pay. That's the price you pay. And what you're supposed to do is build up the students, educate them to be able to put up with it. So that way, what do you think you need to put up with modernity? So, okay, but they should have payers. Boys have payers, you know. So then they won't get into trouble. Like David HaMelech or the tzitzis. I mean, I don't know what it is, but it's a problem. But if you think modernity has advantages, and if you think that listening to music, reading a book, studying science, knowing just to know about what's going on has some value in terms of creating a world view, and that's not contradictory to Torah, then I agree, you're taking a chance. You are taking a chance. I mean, everybody's taking a chance. Life is, you know, even in Meisharim, you know, they walk around. So sometimes they get to Kikar Shabbat. The people who wear that kind of clothes, when they get to Kikar Shabbat, they're the minority, right? They start at Meisharim, they're the majority. They get to Kikar Shabbat, so they're the minority. And that's a real problem for them. It's a real problem, you know, they're running around closing the falafel stands in Geula at night because they had people from Meisharim walking one block to get a falafel, where, you know, where the situation was different. Geula is the enemy. The Geula is the enemy of Meisharim. So I agree, I mean, I understand that. We all understand that. But if you think that it's worth something, so you have to take a chance. And you have to try to teach kids that the religious experience is there for them. If they will just, you know, try to get it. All the best, Rabbi Sacks.
Thank you, Rabbi.
I have to leave a few minutes early. If you're in the National Gallery in London, go and see this painting. I'm sure you'll like it. Okay. Rabbi Sacks, I will talk to you tomorrow.